Welcome to Solutions for a Simpler Life. This is Glenda Lehman Irvin with Lehman's on the Square in Kidron, Ohio. We're glad you've joined us.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of Solutions for a Simpler Life. I'm your host, Glenda Lehman Irvin, and today we have a local organic gardener, Karen Geiser, who has been involved with Lehman's and gardening for a long time. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Karen.
Hi, we live just down the road from Lehman's, and I've done classes and demonstrations here for many years. And we grow, raise grass-fed meats. I raise cut flowers to sell. I also grow a lot of medicinal herbs and veggies for our family. And I have a growing amount of berry and fruit trees around. So lots of things going on the homestead.
Yeah. What kind of classes have you taught at Lehman's?
All kinds. So probably the one I've taught the most is the fermentation classes, making sauerkraut. But I've done cheese making classes, gardening classes, both for adults and children. And I think in the homeschool classes have been some of my favorites. So Farmer Boy was probably one of the most memorable ones. So Farmer Boy, we looked at the books by Laura Ingalls Wilder, Farmer Boy, Little House on the Prairie books, and my son, Obadiah, who at that time was about 10 or 11, helped. And we talked about the history of Almanzo and Laura and some of the things they did and how some of those ancient crafts are still relevant today. And some of those products are on layman's shelves, like making butter, making cheese, some of those things. And then Obi would share about some of his modern Farmer Boy things of taking care of chicks and garden things on the farm. And we also looked at the long winter. And so we would grind wheat in a coffee grinder, let the kids actually do that. We made popcorn like Farmer Boy did. So it was a really good hands-on class.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. So why do you choose to live the way that you do? I mean, you're very passionate and you're very knowledgeable, but it's a lot of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work, but it is something that has been good for our family to work together on the farm. It also is something that nourishes us, both by the little bit slower lifestyle, but also good food. And that's something that we want to keep on doing.
So one of the things with gardening that people may not think about is how important bugs, bees, pollinators are. Can you tell us a little bit about how pollination works and why it's so important?
Well, for a lot of the fruit and vegetable plants, some of them require pollination or we will not have any fruits or vegetables. So bees, native flies, all kinds of other critters are going to be in there after nectar. They're going to get some of the pollen on their legs or just by their wings, beating them around. As they go to the next flower, they're going to drop that pollen and that's going to create the fruit or the vegetable. And so we have to have them. I forget whether it's about 2/3 of our crops require pollination, whereas the others might be wind pollinated or self-fertile, but the 2/3 or so require the pollinators. So yes, we want to do everything we can to attract them, not spray poisons that are going to knock them back, and just encourage those natural processes to happen in the garden.
When I think of pollination, I always think of bees, but it's much more than just bees, isn't it?
Right. The honeybees are actually a smaller portion. There's all kinds of other native bees and wasps, and actually flies are a really important pollinator. I know we usually think of them as kind of gross, but they are really an important species to keep going on the pollination.
So it's like the good Lord had a balance in nature between what we grow and what we eat and the things that we consider a nuisance. And then we come in and decide to kill all the bugs or kill all the bees. And then we're disturbing that balance. And so would you consider yourself an organic gardener? Do you not use chemicals?
Right. We're not certified organic, but yeah, we try and do things as naturally as possible. And yeah, I don't use nasty chemicals to kill things that shouldn't be killed. But I do use one of my best natural bug controls, because everyone does ask, how do you grow vegetables without that? I have a grove of bamboo at the back of my garden, and there are hundreds of birds that roost in there and that bamboo at night. And I really think that's a big part of my insect control. So things that you, where you can attract birds and things that will help control the bad bugs. And then also some of the beneficial insects like praying mantis and some of the parasitic wasps will also keep some of the bad bugs in check. So there's also, you're encouraging the bugs, but you're also wanting to do things where you're discouraging the bad bugs from taking over.
Are there certain things to plant to attract pollinators?
Well, there are a lot of flowers. So obviously we're growing cut flowers, and I'm mixing those rows in with my broccoli, my beans, my other things. So my vegetables and flower gardens are all intermixed, which I really think help attract some of the flowers are going to attract some of the beneficial insects that will pollinate the vegetables. And that is really helpful. Also, I notice on my herb beds, my tea, my medicinal herbs, if I let those go to flower, like the fennel or the anise hyssop, they are just covered in hovering pollinators on sunny days. I can't even identify and recognize all the critters that are working the tops of those umbrels when they're in bloom.
So you actually plant a row of perhaps zinnias and then a row of, I don't know, radishes or lettuce. I don't know why, but in this country, we separate that. You've got your garden over here and you've got your flowers over here, but you're advocating, are there certain ones by your experience that do better together, flowers and vegetables?
Yeah, I don't necessarily mix them intentionally. I might want to make sure my sunflowers aren't too tall in front of a really short crop, or sometimes I might want it, like lettuce, if you might want it shaded in the summer, you can grow something tall like sunflowers on it. Usually flowers are used more, certain ones like marigolds, to repel insects or critters from things. I just find they all mix happily. I'm sure, and I know there are books, Carrots Love Tomatoes and things, that might give some more specific examples.
And you garden year round. We're in Ohio and we have brutal winters and sometimes brutal springs too, but you garden year round outside, don't you?
Yes, we do. And it was a book I got at Layman's probably over 20 years ago. Elliot Coleman's Four Season Harvest. And I thought, if this guy can grow salad in Maine all winter, surely I can do it in Ohio. So my husband has built me many cold frames and small greenhouses over the years. And I do now I have a large high tunnel, 24 by 48, not heated except by the sun. And we have eaten all winter long for many, many years. And I love being outside in my greenhouse. And right now it's April and I'm already harvesting fresh greens while most people are still waiting to get out in their gardens.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, do you buy any food at the grocery store, or would you
you do? Oh, yes. Yeah. I've gotten smarter. I don't have to do everything myself. So I do. Yeah, we do grow from the grocery store, or certain staples that I can't grow as well. And like one of our Amish neighbors grows potatoes really well. So I buy my storage potatoes from them. And so you learn who grows things well, and you realize you don't have to do everything yourself.
Do you barter with some of your neighbors?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have lots of barter buddies.
Yeah. Your barter buddies. Tell me some of the things that you've bartered.
Yeah. Some of the things we've bartered, one of my friends needed buckets of flowers for her event, and she has pork fat that I needed to make into lard. So that was a real win. Sometimes I've had extra seedlings. My children thought it was a real win when I traded kale seedlings and got watermelon seedlings in response. And we just always look out, what do I have extra in my garden, and find out what somebody else has extra. When you're over abundance, that you're very tired of eating, all of a sudden becomes a treasure to someone else who doesn't have that in their garden. And we just keep on the lookout for deal, when our Amish neighbors or the cabbage is on sale or in abundance, and I'll pick up extra for my friend. And yeah, it's really good to be able to trade things.
And that's a very old time thing dating back hundreds, if not thousands of years. I feel too, like some people's property is better at growing, like you mentioned, potatoes or some of the root vegetables, because maybe their soil or their shade. And so maybe your property is better for growing some of the green leafy vegetables. And so, you know, when you find out who those people are, that helps too. Do you feel like you've learned a lot from the Amish? Or I have heard that some of the Amish are actually taking your classes now.
It's a mix. I learn from them. But yeah, certainly it's interesting to see them come to my classes to learn how to make sauerkraut, which supposedly is an ancient craft, but just like any culture, they have modernized and they have skipped generations. I had to learn how to make sauerkraut. I did not learn it from my mother or grandmother. Probably my great grandmother made it. So I had to relearn that also. So yeah, it is interesting. I think many cultures are now coming back, relearning some of those old skills.
Yeah, we're seeing that too, that it's generational, because often those skills were handed down from your parents or grandparents. But if your parents didn't do it and your grandparents didn't do it, then a lot of that knowledge is lost. And that's interesting to me, because that was one of the reasons Dad founded Layman's, is he wanted to make sure that not only products, but skill sets of milking a goat and making cheese, and to your point, making sauerkraut, were still around. So do you do weddings sometimes with your flowers, don't you?
Yes. We grow flowers, cut flowers for florists, but we also do some of our own weddings. I do 100% local flowers that are in season. So I do not order in any roses, carnations, baby's breath. And I really enjoy working with brides who appreciate the local seasonal look. You know, I can't always guarantee what's going to be in bloom because the weather is out of my control. But it is really fun when you can be creative with what is mm-hmm. is in season at the time. So right now it's really early April. I'm already picking some early ranunculus and anemones in my high tunnel. We're picking daffodils. There's a lot of flowering branches that are just about ready. So I could really do a really interesting wedding right now, but it would need to take the right bride.
Yeah, to be. Sure. Have you ever done a wedding with all edible flowers?
No, but we've definitely included them. And I have a request for this summer. She really wants like berries. And so I'm going to use some unripe blackberries in her arrangement. I've seen arrangements with strawberries coming on in the bride's bouquet.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And last year I did an herb bouquet. The bride wanted a lot of as many species of herbs and small flowers in her bouquet as possible. So I made I think there were 25 different, like feverfew and lemon verbena and mints and sage. She wanted a very herbal bouquet. That was a very fun one to make.
Oh yeah. And how special and how specific to that bride. And I love the local connection too. I do feel like transporting food and flowers, oranges, apples, things like that, a long distance, not only is bad for the environment because of the transportation costs, but you're losing something because things are picked too early. Is that true?
Yeah. When you can pick things right at their peak of ripeness, you're going to get the best, like strawberries in June. There's nothing that compares to them. Picking up something at the grocery store in February that's white on the tips is not, it's not a real strawberry.
And they taste different. Yeah. They don't taste as strawberry-ish as when they're fresh. I know growing up, we ate a lot of what was in season. When tomatoes were in season, we ate a lot of tomatoes because we had them in our garden and we didn't necessarily expect fresh tomatoes in December or January. So that's something for people to think about too. And of course, food preservation can help with that. You can preserve the harvest so that you have that nutrient-rich food, even if it's not in season. So right now you have a lot going on with your flowers and your vegetables. You're very knowledgeable. For somebody that's listening that's just getting started, what tip would you have? Like, I don't know anything about this, but I really admire that way of life. What should I do first?
Well, I tell people when they're starting a garden, don't plan on planting a dozen things the first year. You know, choose three or four things, research them, find out how to plant them, what temperatures and they like, what sun, what type of soil. So learn a couple plants at a time. Once you master those, add some more. learn how to preserve one of the foods. And once you've mastered that, preserve another food. So just step by step, very manageable bites is a wise way to start. I do, you know, I have a list of like over 120 medicinal herbs that are on our farm. Some are weeds, some are in my garden, and people feel overwhelmed by that and wonder how I recognize them all. And I said, well, I didn't learn them all or plant them all in 1 year. Mm-hmm. It was over a long, long time. So start small, keep building.
That makes a lot of sense. We've talked a little bit about food preservation. I know you're really big into pickling and fermenting. Is that your favorite way to preserve food? But if you had to pick just one, what's your favorite way to preserve the harvest?
Well, I'm going to go with the easiest one is throwing things in the root cellar. Mm. So you harvest potatoes or carrots or cabbage or whatever, and you can just stick it down the root. There's no processing involved. So I'm going to go with the easy one, but the best, the most nutrient dense and tasty one is definitely going to be the fermentation, where you can make all kinds of kimchi and vegetable combos. So it depends how much time and work you want to put into it.
So the root cellar, because it's what, dry and dark, is that what helps preserve the vegetables?
So we have the benefit of a creepy basement in an old farmhouse. So it's actually a dirt floor. It's very cold. It's like 40 degrees or so down there. It's actually a little bit damp. And that's an ideal, it's like putting the potatoes, keeping them in the ground. Mm. It's that same idea. And most people in modern houses, their basements are 60 degrees, and that's not as ideal for storing things like that.
Right.
So, I'm finding more people are actually building root cellars or figuring out how to root cellar in new houses or burying something in the ground, like an old freezer or something, to create a root cellar.
Yeah, that's great. So pickling and fermenting, basically it's salt, water, and thyme.
Yeah. And one of the big benefits of the fermented foods is most preservation methods, you actually are going to lose nutrition. When you ferment, you're actually gaining nutrition. There's more vitamin C in sauerkraut than there was in that head of cabbage. And there's the probiotics. So it is actually really a nutritional boost to preserve food that way.
Right. And I would encourage listeners to go to blog.laymans.com for more articles or our YouTube channel for more information on food preservation. All right. My final question for you, Karen, every homesteader that I talk to always has something on their bucket list. Say it's the end of 2025. What do you have on your bucket list that you'd like to add to your property or your lifestyle?
This sounds crazy, but I've been growing some different willows or pussy willows and some curly willows. And I had some books on weaving baskets. And I know that sounds like a grandma craft, but I want to try. And I have some old baskets from my ancestors that now I'm starting to look at and go, I wonder how they made those. So, but it's going to have to be, I'm up to be bored to really sit down and do that. So I want to play with some basket weaving.
Yeah, great. Great. Maybe that's a January project. You told me once that you read and research and plan a lot of the winter. Now, of course, you're gardening year round, but I know that in the season, you're very busy working outside.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We will let you get back to your property and all of your chores. Glenda Lehman Irvin signing off for Layman's. Thanks.
This is Glenda Lehman Irvin with Layman's, where we stand for a simpler life. Thanks for listening. For more, visit laymans.com.